Nanyam tadasya sharanam brahmato rupashe My dear Lord and Sinhadeva, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns, they go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, Maunavrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of a lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to the shelter at the lotus feet. Please repeat. My dear Lord Sinhadeva, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed. But they are interested only in their own deliverance. Not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas. Or the forest. To meditate with vows of silence. Maunavrata. They are not interested.
They are not interested
in delivering others.
As for me, however,
I do not wish to be liberated alone. Leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness.
Without taking shelter of your lotus feet,
one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back. To shelter at your lotus feet. Purport. This is the decision of the Vaishnava, the pure devotee of the Lord. For himself, he has no problems, even if he has to stay in this material world, because his only business is to remain in Krishna consciousness. The Krishna conscious person can go even to hell and still be happy. Therefore, Prahlada Maharaj said, Naivo Vijaye Paradaratyaya Vaitaranya, O best of the great personalities, I'm not at all afraid of material existence. The pure devotee is never unhappy in any condition of life. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 6:17-28. Narayana parasarve nakutashana vibhyati swargata varga narakeshvapi tulyastha dashnaha. Devotee solely engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayana, never fear any condition of life. For them, the heavenly planets, liberation, and the hellish planets are all the same. For such devotees are interested only in the service of the Lord. For the devotee being situated in the heavenly planets and being in the hellish planets are equal. For the devotee lives neither in heaven nor in hell, but with Krishna in the spiritual world. The secret of success for the devotee is not understood by the karmis and jnanis. Karmis therefore try to be happy by material adjustment, and jnanis want to be happy by becoming one with the Supreme. The devotee has no such interest. He is not interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest. Rather, his interest is in the busiest part of the world, where he teaches people Krishna consciousness. The Krishna consciousness movement was started for this purpose. We do not teach one to meditate in a secluded place just that one may show that he has become very much advanced and may be proud of his so-called transcendental meditation, although he engages in all sorts of foolish materialistic activity. A Vaishnava like Prahlada Maharaj is not interested in such a bluff of spiritual advancement. Rather, he is interested in enlightening people in Krishna consciousness, because that is the only way for them to be happy. Prahlada Maharaj says clearly Na Yanta Dasya Sharanam Brahmatoro Pashir, I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of the lotus feet, one cannot be happy. One wanders within the universe, life after life, but by the grace of a devotee, a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can get a clue, the clue to Krishna consciousness, and then not only become happy in this world, but also return home back to Godhead. That is the real target of life. The members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement are not at all interested in so-called meditation in the Himalayas or the forest, where one will make only a show of meditation, nor are they interested in opening many schools for yoga and meditation in the cities. Rather, every member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement is interested in going door to door to try to convince people about the teachings of Bhagavad Gita as it is, the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. That is the purpose of the Hare Krishna movement. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement must be fully convinced that without Krishna one cannot be happy. Thus the Krishna conscious person avoids all kinds of pseudo-spiritualists, transcendentalists, meditators, monists, philosophers, and philanthropists. Om Ajnana Tirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Bhangum Langhayate Gim Yati Patamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataram. Read once again the translation. Prabhupada Maharaj says, "My dear Lord Sinhadeva, I see that there are many saintly persons indeed, but they are interested only in their own deliverance, not caring for the big cities and towns. They go to the Himalayas or the forest to meditate with vows of silence, mana vrata. They are not interested in delivering others. As for me, however, I do not wish to be liberated alone, leaving aside all these poor fools and rascals. I know that without Krishna consciousness, without taking shelter of the lotus feet, one cannot be happy. Therefore, I wish to bring them back to shelter at your lotus feet." A fish out of the water can never be happy. We can give anything and everything to the fish, give the fish money, and nice food, and someone may be fanning the fish, and someone may offer arati, and offer all kinds of respects, and everything that is most desirable in this world, and the fish will not be happy because it's out of its environment. So similarly, the soul can never be really happy in the material atmosphere. The soul can only be happy when being situated in the spiritual world, in the original and eternal relationship with the Lord and with all the other spirit souls. So in that kind of environment, the soul can be happy. But artificially, in this material world, no matter what one has, no matter what you can accomplish, what kind of material facilities are there, available, but there is nothing that can actually satisfy the soul. We have in all scriptures this kind of realization, no? In the Bible, Solomon saying that no matter, you know, everything they have, you know, it's all, I don't know how to translate in English, vanity, just, you know, it's not really fulfilling, it's not satisfying the soul, because that's the use of that, you know, it's all temporary. And in the Bible, they have the example of King Yayati. King Yayati, he wanted to enjoy, he had all facilities to enjoy as a powerful king. But he was getting old, and he dared ask his sons to exchange his old age for their youth. And one of the sons actually accepted and exchanged. But even after that, he was not satisfied. And at one point, then he realized that it's a futile attempt to try to extend and extend and extend one's enjoyment in this material world. So then he says one very interesting shloka, which there is a similar one in the Mahabharata. as well, just a few words different. He says, Yat prithivyam prithivyam hiranyam pashavastriyaha nalam vikasa tatsarvam iti matva shamam rajit. Even if a person has all that is available in the world in terms of hiranya, which means gold, pashava, animals, at that time to have elephants and horses and animals. Nowadays we would say not to have cars and motorbikes and airplanes and helicopters and how do you call it?
Yes.
Boats. And so even if one has all of that, hiranya, pashava, striha, all the women of the world, in other words, even if you give to one person, select one human being, and give to that person everything that is available in the entire planet. He says, Nada me casa tatsatam. Oh, that is not be enough to that one person to be satisfied. Itimatoshamandaji. So, understanding that you should give up the attempt to achieve material happiness and satisfaction because it's never achievable. So one should move on in a satisfied manner. Shamandaji. Move on. Seeking for the actual happiness of spiritual life. So, the devotee should have this point clear for himself first, and then with that conviction, then he can develop compassion for all living entities. Because he knows, even though people may superficially appear to be happy and satisfied and striving for material happiness, but they cannot. So understanding that, then he has the motivation to preach, like Prahlad Maharaj is expressing here. And the Bhagavatam is full of such examples. No? Right in the beginning, before Sukadeva Goswami starts to speak, he glorifies Sukadeva Goswami, from whom he heard the Bhagavatam, and he says that he is a great sage because he is able to enter everyone's heart. Yasarva Bhuta Hridayam Munima Tosmi. I bow down to him, the great Muni who is able to enter people's heart. And he can feel for them. So he's very compassionate. How did he become like that? No? Yaswanu Bhavam Akila Shruti Sarvamekam Adhyatma Dipamati Titir Shatantam Mudan Sansari Nam Karunaya Aha Purana Bhujam. Because he had realized the topmost knowledge, the knowledge which is like a lamp illuminating the essence of the Vedas. In other words, Srimad Bhagavatam is the torchlight, the transcendental torchlight illuminating the Vedanta Sutra, which is the essence of all the Vedas. Because he had realized that, then he decided to speak the Purana Guhyam, the confidential Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, which can help those who are struggling to cross over the material existence to achieve their eternal destination, to go back to Godhead. So, he had that kind of feeling for all living entities. That's why he engaged in speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise, he was already Atmarama. He didn't need anything. No? Why would he spend his time sitting there in that assembly? But he did that because having realized that topmost knowledge, he developed such a compassion of the Vaishnava. Krishna describes in Bhagavad Gita how devoted he has that capacity to connect to everyone. He says, Atma upamena sarvatra saman pashati yo arjuna. So Atma upamena means he can see others as he experiences his own self. So it's not that if he's okay, then doesn't matter, let the other people suffer. Okay, let me find my own happiness, my own deliverance, and I don't care about others. No, because Atma upamena, he can identify, he can feel for others. Sukam vaya divadu kam. Sa yogi paramatma. Then Krishna says, that person who can identify with others' happiness when they're happy and with their suffering, he is the topmost yogi. He's really connected. He's really, because being connected to Krishna means that you're connected to everyone else also. Yesterday I was listening to the class Gopinatha Chakra was giving online on the Chandogya Upanishad, and it has a famous passage, Tattvamasi. You are that. No? So he was describing how Shankaracharya explains that and how different acharyas explain and how Madhvacharya explains. Madhvacharya is especially creative. He said one of the ways he explains is Atma, sa Atma, tatvamasi. So the word Atma ends in a long A. So he splits that A And he says, Atma, and then Atat Tamasi. You are not that Atma. You are not that Supreme. So you are different from the Supreme. Because he was emphasizing duality, no? Dvaita philosophy. But then, anyway, so there are different ways of interpreting that passage. But one very sweet way that Bhukanta Chakra was mentioned yesterday, some acharyas they say, Tatvamasi means that you are very close to him. You are very intimately connected to that supreme truth, to that absolute truth. So the devotee, being intimately connected, like Krishna said in that shloka, Sayogi Paramamataha. He's the topmost yogi when he can identify with others, he can feel for others in their happiness, in their distress. So he's the topmost yogi, he's the most connected to him, and automatically he can connect to everybody else. We have been studying the sixth canto also. 2 days ago we read on shloka that each morning after being requested by the demigods, then he asked them, but come on, you cannot understand how painful it is to give up one's body? How can you ask me to give up my body like that? But then when they see the anxiety of the demigods, they say, okay, actually they use the word avyaya dharma. Itavan avyaya dharma. He says that the imperishable dharma is actually when one sees that the living entity is suffering or is rejoicing, then he says, Atma Shochiti Rishati. No, the person can identify with that and he can, together with them, he can also enjoy or feel for their suffering. So he says that is the Ajaya Dharma, that is the topmost religious principle. So in Prabhupada, he's very emphatic, he has that same mood. No? Even though there may be transcendentalists who are not like that, who are not so much interested in others, but Prabhupada says that this is not, they're not as advanced as one who is able to feel compassion for everybody else. And it's interesting that in the list of 26 qualities of a devotee, that's what we are doing here on these Tuesdays, no? We are speaking about these 26 qualities, and today we are taking the first one, and the first quality that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu identifies is Kripa. So Kripa, no? Means mercy, compassion. And the devotee, he is like that because he is intimately connected to Krishna, and Krishna is Karuna Sindhu, no? Hey Krishna, Karuna Sindhu. So if Krishna is the ocean of compassion, then the devotee being connected to him, he can go there, to that ocean, and he can extract some of that compassion, just like we sing in the morning. Samsara dava nala lida loka, tranaya karunya ghana ghanatvam. So the guru, the Vaishnava, he becomes like a cloud. He's able to go to the ocean of all good qualities, including compassion, no? Gunarana vasa, and he obtains from that ocean all these qualities. So he becomes like a cloud, Gana Ghanatvam. And in this way he is able to pour, to shower that compassion on the living entities, to extinguish the forest fire of material existence. So, but the big question here is not so much what is compassion or how important compassion is, but actually the question is, how can we become like that? How can we develop compassion? Genuine compassion for the living entity. And I was thinking about that. I don't think I have the full answer, but I was trying to reflect on that this morning. How can we become compassionate? How can that become actually part of us? And I thought one way is to follow the footsteps of those who are compassionate. So someone may not, I have a friend who is a doctor, and then after graduating as a doctor, he went to serve on a mission with the Doctors Without Frontier, Without Border, how do you call it in English? Without Frontier. So they go voluntarily helping, you know, in different parts of the world where there is some kind of difficulty, and they go and help. So, but I know it's a good friend of mine, and basically a whole youth we studied together in the same school, and we used to climb mountains together. He was a very, he was not a very soft-hearted person. He was quite, how to say, not cold, but like, he was not a compassionate person. But he went to that, no? After going there, even nowadays, now he's back in Brazil, but he's always making some campaign, trying to encourage people to help, to support this kind of activities. So, even though maybe he wasn't like a super compassionate person, but by engaging himself in that mission of someone who was compassionate, who started something to help humanity, then he developed some compassion, for sure. And in the same way, even though we may not feel that we are very compassionate, but if engaging Prabhupada's mission and try to assist his compassionate mission, so by assisting Prabhupada in his compassion, you know, he wants to spread Krishna consciousness. He knows that people need that. The world needs Krishna consciousness. So somehow or another we can have Prabhupada assisting him in that mission, then we also develop compassion. That's one way that I was thinking. And also, it's important to cultivate our connection with the Lord very deeply. Because superficially, even if you have compassion, it's not very relevant. So you have to cultivate deeply Krishna consciousness, then compassion can actually manifest. And the difference of the shallow compassion, the deep compassion is illustrated nicely in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna is there, he asks Krishna, can you please put the chariot between the two armies? And then Krishna goes and puts right in front of Bhima and Bhishma and Drona, and he creates a situation in which Arjuna becomes very perplexed, because suddenly he sees, oh my God, I have to fight my teachers, my grandfather, and he becomes bewildered. And then Arjuna, he doesn't want to fight anymore. And it's described that he feels compassion, that compassion, and how is that? Kripaya palaya vishto. He is overwhelmed by para kripa, which means, could be explained as transcendental compassion, or high grade of compassion, not ordinary compassion. So Prabhupada then explains the next purport, that the quality of Arjuna's compassion was actually transcendental. It is a symptom of a pure devotee. It was not because of material identification, but it's actually because he was compassionate Vaishnava. And then Prabhupada goes on to say that he quotes Prabhupada Maharaj also saying that if one is a devotee, then he develops automatically all the good qualities of the demigods, and that's why Arjuna is feeling compassion. That compassion is transcendental. Kripaya palaya vishto. In another way, I don't know if Prabhupada mentioned that in the book, but I think it's Vishwanath Chakravarti. He says, paraya, kripaya, also may be understood in the sense of that his compassion was not only for his own soldiers, but even aparaya, if you split the a and put to the other side, then kripaya, aparaya, even for the other side of the battlefield, he's also feeling compassion for them. So his compassion was not just, okay, my side, my friends, my warriors, but was a compassion which is equal to everyone. And then, so Prabhupada is praising Arjuna's compassion. But then it's funny because in the next purport, when Arjuna wants to give up fighting and he says that he's trembling and the Gandiva bow is slipping from his hand, and then Prabhupada says, no, wait a minute, this is material fear. No? Prabhupada says there are two types of trembling. One is out of ecstasy in spiritual realization, and one is out of fear because of bodily identification. And in this case, Arjuna is showing that he's too much identified with the body. So, how to understand that? Well, in one purport, just the previous verse, Prabhupada said Arjuna's compassion is transcendental, Vaishnava should be compassionate, that is proper. And then in the next verse, Prabhupada is not accepting Arjuna's compassion, saying this is just material symptom. So when I had to teach Bhakti Shastra for the first time, I was puzzled with this section of for a few days. I was reading all the commentaries that I could find. And then one day, I got some insight from that. And then what I understood from that is that, yes, it is a symptom of a Vaishnava to have compassion. And it's a transcendental quality. It's not something material. Vaishnava feels like that. It's praised in the Bhagavad, it's praised everywhere. This is a quality of a devotee. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lists as the first of the 26 qualities of a devotee. So to be compassionate is proper and is needed for a Vaishnava. But the point is how to express that compassion. So to express that compassion superficially is not good. It's not enough. No? Because Arjuna wanted to express compassion by stop fighting, by avoiding the fight. But as Krishna will tell him later, even in spite of you, you may fight or not fight, but these people are going to die anyway. Read the fifth one. You may not fight, but even without you, I'm going to kill all these people. Now he's speaking as the universal form. He's speaking as, you know, he's saying, I am time. Time I am the destroyer of the world. And in spite of you, you fight or not fight, I'm going to kill everybody anyway. So Arjuna's trying to avoid the fight was not actually a way of showing compassion, because he could not stop them from dying. So real compassion would be to cooperate with Krishna's plan, because that was the most compassionate plan. Those people who are going to die in the battlefield, as they can own Bhishma Deva will explain the battle of arrows when Yudhishthira Maharaj comes and he's feeling so sorry and so guilty because so many people died because of him. And then Bhishma tells him, no. All those people who died in the battlefield, they achieved their original swarupa, they went back to Godhead. That was Bhishma Deva's realization, and he told that to Yudhishthira Maharaj in the bed of arrows. So dying in the battlefield was not actually anything bad, but was the perfection of life for all those warriors who died, because they are dying in Krishna's presence. So whoever died received the highest mercy of the Lord. And those who stayed back, who didn't die, they also received the mercy of the Lord, because instead of being under the reign of Duryodhana, now they were under the protection of Yudhishthira Maharaj, who was a great king. He was Rajarshi, same king, and under his protection, they would advance toward the ultimate goal of life. So for them also, was actually very good. And for the planet Earth as a whole, Krishna had to fulfill one promise, that he came to the Earth. Okay. Krishna came to this planet with the mission of relieving the burden of the Earth. And by removing so many warriors in the battlefield, he also contributed for that. So it was also good for the Earth. And if you think, okay, what about everybody else? What about us? Yes, everybody else who came after that, all the generations to come, including us and others that will come, they are all getting the benefit of the Bhagavad Gita, and they also can, through that, become winners in the fight against Maya. So what Krishna did was good for everyone, and Arjuna's compassion was superficial. So Krishna, not for criticizing compassion, he's criticizing Arjuna's trying to express compassion in a superficial way. So real compassion is to see what's the spiritual benefit for all living entities, and to try to interact with everybody else in a way that they get spiritual benefit. That is real compassion. So it's described that a devotee, as he advances, he expands his capacity to relate to others in a spiritual platform. And I'll try to base this on three verses of the 11th canto. There's a description of the Prakriti Bhakta in the 11th canto, no? That the materialistic devotee, the neophyte, he comes to Krishna consciousness and he establishes a connection with the Lord. He worships the Lord with faith. And he has that respect for the deity, for Krishna. And maybe also for Guru. Guru and Krishna, he's very respectful, he worships them. But to other devotees and to other people in general and other living entities, he is not so considerate. So that's the description of a materialistic devotee. He can have a spiritual relationship only when he's dealing with the deity and with the spiritual master. But while Bhakteshu and Aniyeshu, the other Bhaktas and the other people and other living entities, he's not compassionate to them. He doesn't care much. Then, that's what I was thinking, you know, that the more we develop our spiritual consciousness, our intimate connection to Krishna, the more we are able to be compassionate. Because in the beginning, we only care about Krishna and us. So we have the tendency to want liberation, I want to be free from material miseries, I want to establish my connection to Krishna, but everybody else, I'm not really interested. Then, if we advance more, if we become Madhyama Bhaktas, then we develop the capacity to not only serve the Lord, but also to serve the Vaishnavas, to make friendship with the other devotees, no? And we try to be merciful to the living entities which are not enemies. So those who we see that we can easily bring to Krishna consciousness, then we show them compassion, we try to give them Krishna consciousness. And we keep distance from others who are not so favorable. So that's the Madhyama. But the Uttama Bhakta, he's the one who, in any situation of life, with whomever he is dealing, he always acts on the spiritual platform. No, doesn't matter that he's dealing with a devotee, with Krishna the altar, with an ordinary living entity, with an atheist, with materialist, with an animal, with a plant, doesn't matter. Whenever he deals with someone, any living entity, he deals in the spiritual platform. So that means his capacity to show compassion, to deal with others on the spiritual plane, increases. So the more we can go deeper and deeper in our spiritual connection with Krishna, then automatically we can expand that to others and we can relate to everybody else on the spiritual platform. So it's not an easy thing to do, so it requires a lot of mindfulness, thoughtfulness, you know, cultivating Krishna consciousness carefully in the association of advanced devotees, trying to somehow imbibe the mood of the great acharyas, you know, reciting verses like these, meditating this kind of statement by Prabhupada Maharaj, so that we can gradually assimilate. The more we appreciate others, the more we imbibe their qualities. You know? That works for good and for bad. To criticize others and fix the mind on the defects of others, very easily we absorb those defects. And very soon we see ourselves doing the same thing that we hated seeing in others. And but the good side of it is that if you appreciate the good qualities of others, we absorb them. And the more intensity we put, the intensity is like a fire, no? If you're very intense about something, like we hate, and then we become like that. Or we love and appreciate, admire someone with great intensity, and very quickly also we develop those qualities that we appreciate. So the intensity actually is very important, because the intensity will be like the fire, and the fire will melt our heart, our consciousness, and then the consciousness will take that shape that we are fixing our mind in. I had one experience from the time I was in the army, the military school actually. The first year students, they suffer a lot in the hands of the senior students. No? It's a 5-year course with the senior students, everybody lives in the same school, in the huge school with 2,500 students, 500 more or less each year. And then they have separate quarters, like a corridor with so many rooms, and for different years. No? So the senior students at night, they invade the rooms of the juniors and they torture him. Literally, they torture. And after torturing, they take to their room and make them, they polish their boots and iron their clothes and wash their everything. No? So it's like a torture for 1 year. And I saw, like, you cannot escape, even though there are metal gates that are locked at night to protect, in the attempt of protecting the junior students. But they, because they had all this military training, they would get all kinds of ways to get into our rooms. No? Once in the middle of the night, we left the window open. No? And then in the middle of the night, these students from the third and fourth year, they came with ropes from the roof, and they came with rappels, and they came with the ropes, and they came inside the room with the boots full of mud. They're coming from they were camping. They came with the full of mud, no? And walked on top of the bed sheets and everything, and made a big mess. And then at the torching house, they took us to the room to clean everything, and then come back to clean our rooms before sunrise. No? And so it was like a very heavy thing. But some of the students, their attitude was, anyway, we have to tolerate for 1 year. And then we're free of that. It's just the first year. Let's survive it somehow. And others, they would really hate the senior students. They would criticize them, they would shout at them, they would, not at them, after they had left. No? they would blaspheme even the all the generations of those people, not their mothers and grandmothers and grandmothers. So, really intense, no? And then I noticed that when we became third and fourth year students, those who hated and who were so intense about hating the senior, they became just like them. Was amazing. I would say, well, come on, I remember you. How much you hated this. He said, yes, now I'm going to do the same. And those who didn't care so much, who were not so intense about their feelings, they anyway, leave them, let's study, let's gain more by studying than wasting our night torturing the poor guys there. So I learned that, no? It's very important how we fix our mind and very careful about the intensity of our feelings towards others, because it's a psychological thing. We are going to absorb that. So we should absorb the good qualities of the Vaishnavas by intensely meditating on them, reciting these glories, praising them, and feeling, no, the desire to develop those qualities. So this is the first quality of the Vaishnava. I ask for your blessing so that I can develop more and more of that, no, and be consistent with the philosophy that I read and speak so often. So I stop here, and if anybody wants to compliment, share some realizations, ask any questions, no, we have some few minutes more. Maharaj.
Thank you for an inspiring talk. I like your point about increasing capacity for compassion. And I was just thinking in the three categories, the Pratyekamutta and the Madhyama Uttama, whether one can look at the Pratyekamutta position in a more positive light as providing impetus for moving upward, and likewise from the Madhyama position to move up to the Uttama.
Okay.
If you can say something.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you for that observation. I think it's very important also to appreciate, because all of them are considered devotees, huh? The bhaktas. And in that level, they're acting the way they can act. And they should act in that, because that's the adhikara they have. If they try to act in an adhikara above, in a way above their adhikara, above their qualification, that's not proper and is not actually considered good. So there's another shloka, I think also in the 11th canto, that says that real piety is to act according to your adhikara, your qualification. So if one is a new devotee, and I remember when I started practicing Krishna consciousness, how scared I was of even seeing any materials. I'm from Brazil, no? I remember visiting my parents and they wanted to take me to the beach and I said, no way, I'm not going to the beach. I know how you're going to be dressed in the beach. I'm not going. And it was the right thing to do because I'm just starting my spiritual life and they take me to the beach. What am I going to, how can I deal with that? Now I'm back to Brazil after 12 years in India and I went to with my wife and I don't care. It's okay. No, I'm married. But that time as a brahmachari, starting my Krishna consciousness, I didn't want. So it's important for the devotee who is starting to protect himself and to actually for some time keep distance from anything that can threaten his Krishna consciousness. So that's it's a protection and it's a natural thing to happen. But it's not be forever, no? Because one cannot also isolate himself forever and turn his back to the world and then not preach. So in order to preach, then he has, when he feels a little more confident and stable in his spiritual life, then it's okay, let me preach. But let me still be careful with those who are too antagonistic. And then he is in that level, he's preaching, he goes as far as he feels comfortable working. But then at one point, no, when the person is 100% fixed up, and his faith is absolute, and his knowledge is super clear, then he's an uttamadhikari, he's uttamabhakta, he can actually express compassion to everyone. He's not going to be affected by them. He's actually emanating, no, Krishna consciousness. So that's what, I don't know if that helps, Maharaj. If you want to add something or some realization on that. Mataji wanted to say
one thought comes to my mind that really the development of compassion is directly connected with getting on deeper levels of chanting, because that's when we connect with the Lord. And as we endeavor to really connect when we chant, then we can see every living entity as part and parcel of Krishna.
Yeah.
But as long as that connection is not there, then our attempts to be compassionate often is a little sentimental, because it's still under that duality of seeing one person as a friend, one person as an enemy, and we are compassionate to our friends but not compassionate to our enemies. But as we deepen our chanting, then we can truly be compassionate.
Uh-huh. Yes. Yeah. Only if you can actually deal with others, seeing them as spirit souls, then you can be compassionate. Sanam, Sarvam, how is that? Sarvatra, Samavastitam, Ishvaram, Nahinastat, Mahatmanam, Tato Yati Paragati. Krishna makes the point that when you can see the presence of the soul and the super soul in everyone's heart, then only you can deal with those, with others, any other living entity, on the spiritual platform. Because otherwise, we try to exploit them. So, when you see the spirit soul there, then nothing else has come up, man. We're not going to degrade ourselves by our mind. In other words, we're not going to see them as a material object to be exploited. We see them as a spirit soul, which deserves respect, deserves, which has a purpose also in connecting with Krishna. Yeah, so that's the only way connecting. And the holy name is the key for us to do that connection nowadays, no? In this age of Kali. Yeah, thank you, Mataji, for that. Any other question or comments? Okay, so thank you very much. Vantarada Shmad Bhagavatam ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai.